You're listening to the Jackie Daily Show. Okay, apparently young people are no longer going to buy new stuff, new clothes, new furniture, new anything, because they believe that not buying new things actually is environmentally responsible and somehow contributes to fighting climate change. Now, you know, I'm not losing sleep over climate change, I'll be frank with you. But it is also true, I kind of like this trend for a number of reasons, and I've always been this way. Initially, it was forced. Growing up in Appalachia, sometimes beneath the poverty line, my mom always bought my clothes at yard sales. Why? Because you could get for 10 cents what you would pay, you know, 15 bucks for at Walmart. Yes, Walmart was our alternative, okay? We didn't have Neiman Marcus out in Appalachia. But anyway, you know, like here in North Dallas, yeah, you go to Neiman's, you buy a kid's shirt at 60 bucks. You buy it at a yard sale, it's a dollar, right? So for us, it was socioeconomic. And throughout my life, like I will always see through those eyes. Even now, it is really tough for me to pass up a bargain. It is tough for me to walk past a high-level consignment store and not walk in. And I notice in the higher income neighborhoods, the kids are walking around in these like really ratty clothes. And sometimes it's cool. I was at a party. I saw a girl, maybe a young woman, maybe 22. And she was wearing this shirt that looked like it had been washed 500 times. And it said Journey, you know, tour 1983. And I'm like, wow, where did you get that? Is that real? And she's like, yes, this is the authentic Journey shirt from 1983. Here's the tour on the back and all the... And I was like, that's amazing. I'm like, where did you get that? And I mean, I will be honest, like this shirt looked like hell. It was, I mean, all balled up, falling apart, still cool because it's Journey. And so it turns out there's a store on Lower Greenville in Dallas that actually specializes in this kind of like memorabilia. So a slightly different story. But, you know, I'm that person. My spouse says I am the greenest dresser in North Dallas by far. If it's a shirt I sleep in, socks I sleep in, hey, I keep them with holes in them. I don't care. I like cost effectiveness. I just don't care. I will die this way. It doesn't matter if I ever become rich and famous. I will die this way. And that drives him crazy. But this younger generation is doing this out of some kind of a green ethic. Okay, fine. I'm not offended. And there are a couple of benefits to this that I think are underexplored. Number one, I'm sure you've noticed, it's almost impossible to go to the mall or online and purchase something new that isn't made in a country that is hostile to this country. And it really, really, really bothers me. I spend an extraordinary amount of time trying to shop and only purchase things from countries that like us, like Vietnam, like the Philippines. I mean, assuming you can believe the labeling, which is another question. I put on Facebook last year, I had four shirts, same size, same brand, same size, different colors, purchased from the same store at the same time. They arrive in the mail. Those four shirts, same brand, same size, all supposedly were made in different countries. China, India, the U.S., and I forget what the other country was. I don't believe that for one minute. I think there's a lot of funny business in the labeling. But I want to support countries that support us. I absolutely believe every dollar you spend is a democratic decision. I am voting for this company, this product, and not this one. I take it very seriously. We should all take it seriously. That's a form of power that you have that you don't fully appreciate. You don't think about it enough. I decide which gas station I pull into, and there are reasons why I choose one company over the other. There are reasons why I choose Peru over, well, a lot of places, to be honest with you. Here's also what I'm thinking. I've decided that if I need something, I'm going to go onto a site like Etsy ETSY. And hey, I'm not being sponsored by Etsy. I'm just telling you what I think. I like the idea of an Etsy or an eBay and buying a used item that's putting putting money into the hands of an American. I love that, right? I want to help Americans. I don't want to give money to the department store in the hostile country that hates us that just manufactured a brand new thing. So if you get something from Etsy or eBay, even if it is made in a country that hates us, you're giving it to an American who needs the money right now. So I like this. I feel like it's not a perfect model, but as a general rule, if you're buying Etsy, which is like homemade stuff, vintage stuff, or eBay, which is secondhand stuff, you're mostly buying American. So anyway, I like it. I like it a lot. Second, when you wear used things, whether you bought them yourself and you're reusing them for the 500th time like I do, or you're buying them secondhand at a secondhand store or yard sale or whatever, literally, those items have washed a lot of the chemicals out of them, whether it's dyes or it's like, wrinkle-free chemicals. There's some kind of chemical they dip it in to make it wrinkle-free, or Static Guard. There are a lot of chemicals that go into clothes that make them a bit toxic. And let me tell you, some of those chemicals are synthetic estrogens. I've probably not worn you all out enough on synthetic estrogens and how dangerous they are. Whether it's effeminizing men or making women less fertile, more prone to cancer. There are a lot of downsides. It's not natural to ingest synthetic estrogens by the hundreds the way we do in this country every year. And they're ubiquitous. It's impossible to get away from it. It's in your food. It's in your clothes. It's in your soap. It's in your shampoo. It's in your cosmetics. It's in your pharmaceuticals. It's very, very difficult to clean it out of your life. But I'll tell you, I thought about it. Growing up, you know, we never had a car that had new car smell. You know why? Because we couldn't afford a new car. But new car smell is, you know, when you're smelling that, you are inhaling synthetic estrogens. I promise you. That is what you're smelling plastic, you're smelling chemicals, you're smelling fragrance. All of the things that are in a new vehicle, you are inhaling it, absorbing it. You absolutely are. In fact, that's why you can detect it with your nose. And so wealthier people are exposed to a whole lot more synthetic estrogen than poor people on average, unless you live by farmland, which is doused in pesticides. Then maybe if you're working on a farm, you get exposed to a lot of it. I'm a little bit of an environmentalist purist on these points. I've invested a lot of time and energy in learning about this. I don't know how all of you will feel about it, but this is the one place where I tend to be aligned with environmentalists and actually extremely disappointed at how little attention is given to these issues. I mean, you know what? Google it, okay? Just Google the 50% drop in sperm levels in men in the Western world over the past 50 years. What do you think is causing that? Synthetic estrogens. It's causing infertility. It's causing cancer. And it's causing men to not be bold, manly, courageous. Now I'm going to be very inappropriate and politically incorrect. There's actually a lot of studies on this that show if you feed monkeys synthetic estrogens like soy and other things like that, they will eventually become both more submissive and more passive aggressive and depressed. I'm serious. Look it up. In fact, I just ran across that one last week. That now the studies are coming out all over the place and people are pretending like, oh, we didn't know this. They've known it for a long, long time. Okay, a long time. If I haven't scared you sufficiently, I'm going to tell you once more about the alligators at Lake Apopka. Remember that study? Do you want me to scare you with Lake Apopka? Here it is very quickly. You can Google this easily. Lake Apopka is just outside of Orlando, Florida, not far. And so there were two ponds tested by scientists. One pond was surrounded by farmland, so the pesticides that were washing into the pond made the parts per million pesticide count or chemical count, synthetic estrogen count, very high. Not too far away was the pond that was not surrounded by farmland, and the parts per million synthetic estrogens were very low. They compared the gator population of those two ponds. And what they found was many of the male gators in the polluted pond with the pesticides or synthetic estrogens either had no genitalia or were hermaphroditic, or if they did have genitalia, it was 25% smaller than the genitalia of the gators one pond over where there was not polluted synthetic estrogen pesticides, okay? Look it up. Lake Apopka. If I have to scare you, I'll do it. If that's what it takes, capital A, P-O-P-K-A, Lake Apopka. That's an old study, by the way. And it was replicated across many studies, not just for animals as large as alligators, which can be as big as us, right? I mean, the damage done to an animal depends on the dosage, naturally. And so gators are huge. It's impacting them this way, but you know what? It probably impacted them from the time they were in utero. Or I guess gators aren't really in utero, pardon me. It affects the animal from the earliest moments of its existence, okay? From the time it was conceived, we'll put it that way. That's where the dose is really having its damage. When it crosses the placenta in a human, when it gets to the smallest unit of that gator at the first moment of its existence, and then the time that it grows, developmentally, it has growth spurts. You don't want it to be doused in estrogen at those moments. We're talking about same in lobsters, fish, frogs. Alex Jones was not lying about that. And other animals too, including you. So avoid chemicals. Hear me on this. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. Follow me online at jackiedaily.com or follow me on the X at Jackie Daily Host. Jackie, no E, daily like every day. All right, I just now saw a CNN poll, and I know what you're thinking. Why is my favorite radio host watching CNN? It was a total accident. I walked into the studio. They had it on. I had nothing to do with it. It was an accident. But here's what I saw that might interest you. So the question is, what percentage of Americans believe the U.S. should slash greenhouse gases in half by 2030, 7 years from now? Supposedly, we're supposed to believe. The answer is 95% of Democrats, 76% of independents, and 50% of Republicans want this country to reduce greenhouse gases in half by 2030. Now, I don't buy this. I think a lot of polls are trash. Depends on how the question is asked. But let's just assume it's only 60% that bad. It still tells me a significant number of people have no idea what this would be required in a sacrifice of their lifestyle and freedom. So I have on the line Steve Gorham. He's the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, author of 4 books on energy. He's been on the show before recently to talk about one of them, which is Green Breakdown, the Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And I believe he knows the answer to the question I just posed. Steve, welcome back.
Hi, Jackie. Great to join you again. Yeah, I think the answer to your question is it can't be done. And I don't think most Americans realize that. They all think they need to slash greenhouse gases. But it really, really is not going to be something that can happen. And worldwide, emissions of carbon dioxide continue to rise. And they're going to continue to rise for another decade or two, despite what all the people in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, at COP28 want us to do.
Yeah, we can talk about that, too. But, you know, the issue is, if you're an American, 50% of Republicans who think, yeah, I'm ready to give up, you know, 50% of greenhouse gas emissions, that sounds great to me, in 7 years. What exactly will these people have to give up to make that happen?
Well, that's very sad. First off, they should all know that every day we each exhaust about 2 pounds of carbon dioxide just through breathing. I don't think we're going to change that. And there's nothing in this world that doesn't emit carbon dioxide. There's no such thing as net zero. If you build any kind of a building and you put wood in it and you put glass in it and you put copper for pipes and you put ceramic and you put steel and you put concrete, every one of those things emits carbon dioxide when it's created and when it's transported. You can't even build a grass hut that is zero emissions. If you cut down wood and you cut down grass and you build a grass hut, you emit carbon dioxide. So people don't really have any idea that our economy and our standard of life is built on emissions of carbon dioxide. It's built on hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. And not only can it be done, but it shouldn't be done.
Well, let's imagine this. I mean, right now, the globe relies about 80% on fossil fuels for its for its electricity, for its transportation fuel, for its petrochemicals, which is things like plastics or pharmaceuticals, or you know, the basics of modern sanitation are all derived from fossil fuels. So if we take a 50% reduction in carbon emissions, sounds to me like most of that goes away, at least in a hefty percentage. What percentage of my day do I want to have access to electricity? What am I willing to give up, frankly? I think that's a better way to put the question. Are you comfortable with giving up 40% of your electricity use?
Well, people don't. They just don't really know. They all think they got to reduce carbon dioxide, but they, there have been other polls that said, "How much will you pay to reduce carbon dioxide?" and people go, $10.
Yeah.
so there's the polls tend to be kind of meaningless. But again, I get back to this this COP28, the United Nations 28th Conference of the Parties. They've been having these conferences every year since 1995, and today they have. There are 70,000 people in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. And to get there, they all took either private jets or commercial jets. And if you fly on an aircraft, for every pound of fuel that you burn, pound of jet fuel, you emit 3 pounds of carbon dioxide. And then once they get there, they have taken limos and taxis and cars to the convention center, Expo City. And those are fueled by gasoline and diesel fuel. And by the way, those delegates all have a smartphone, and smartphones are made from plastic, from oil or natural gas. They're all wearing suits, ties, and shoes and underwear. At least I think they are.
Don't bank on it. I don't know.
Those are composed of synthetic fibers made from hydrocarbons. They're going to dine on food that is produced by farms that use synthetic nitrogen fertilizer created from ammonia, which was produced from natural gas or coal fuels. Everything we do is based on hydrocarbons. They drive our modern society.
Well, so as long as we're willing to cut our lifestyle by 50% of wealth, of everything, it would actually be significantly more. A 50% reduction in our use of all of these products would be far more than 50% of our share, because it would shut down everything. The price of everything would skyrocket when there's less oil, gas, and coal being produced.
Well, it's even worse than that, and you're right about that. But it's even worse, and that is that if you really look closely at the science, you find that global warming and the greenhouse effect, which is blamed for man-made global warming, are dominated by nature, not human emissions. We've had only now this summer we've had there was a guy who published a paper, a scientist said that July could be the hottest month in 120,000 years.
Okay.
And the United Nations said the era of global boiling has arrived.
Yes.
And this was in CNN, and it was on USA Today, and it was all the AP. It was all over, but it's flat out wrong.
Hold that thought for just a second. I want to take a break. When we come back, we'll get right back on that point.
Okay.
You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show, and I am back with Steve Gorham, Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, author of four books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development, including Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Okay, where we left off is we had these headlines from Fortune magazine saying July could be the hottest month in 120,000 years. The Guardian, also in July, saying the era of global boiling has arrived, says the UN chief. Now, we know that this week at COP28, the 28th annual United Nations Climate Conference, that the chairman of the conference says science has not shown that we're in a climate emergency or that fossil fuels reduction could change the situation of the climate, which was a fascinating contradiction of what apparently the UN chief said here. But Mr. Gorham, these are extreme statements. And you know what? Actually, not the first time that an environmental activist at a high level, like Al Gore, has said that waters could be boiling. The planet would be so hot. These are extremely irresponsible statements. Just like when he said that the southern half of the state of Florida would be underwater by now. The fact that these prophecies don't come true doesn't seem to harm his credibility somehow. Mr. Gorham, what is your response to that?
Yeah, so we have oceans of evidence that we're not in abnormally warm times. Thermometers have existed for about 140 years back to 1880, and since that period we've had a rise of about 1 degree Celsius in 140 years, about 2 degrees Fahrenheit. Not very much, but scientists use proxies to go back further, and proxies are things that move like temperature, tree rings, for example, or the ratio of oxygen isotopes in ice or in plankton of seashells, those sorts of things. And those measures show that we've had many times when it's been warmer in the past than it is today. 1,000 years ago, the Vikings settled southwest Greenland, and they formed a colony, and at that time they had trees that were 20 feet high. Today, there are nothing on that site except scrub grasses. And so we've had multi-century-long periods in the last 10,000 years when it was warmer than today. And just to give you an idea, an example is the Mendenhall Glacier, which is near Juneau, Alaska, southeast Alaska. And that glacier has been receding for more than 100 years, and so the climate alarmists have put up pictures of it in the 1880s and then today showing that it's much smaller. But about 8 or 10 years ago, scientists went down inside ice caves underneath that glacier, and they found some interesting information. They found tree stumps still in the ground, with their roots still in the ground. They're at least a foot in diameter, and they find many such tree stumps, not just one or two. They radiocarbon dated those stumps and found they were 1,000 years old. And so the evidence shows that 1,000 years ago in this location there was a forest, and today there is a glacier. And this is just one of many, many examples that we've had warmer periods in the past. Yet today it is used as an alarming thing, and people say, wow, we've got this problem and we're all going to boil. We have to get rid of it. And again, these conditions, the warming and cooling throughout history has been driven by natural factors, not power plants, not light bulbs, not sport utility vehicles. And now we think this 1 degree rise recently has to be due to your neighbor's SUV. That, to me, is the biggest modern superstition, the biggest superstition in modern history. And we've got 70,000 people in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, that are signed up to this, so including most of our world leaders.
Okay. Yeah, and what are people willing to give up? I found some headlines here that you passed along that I enjoyed from Nation World. This is September 2022 headline. Britons should stop bathing to save energy.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've noticed this trend catching on in the United States, self-imposed among some people. I mean, this place is a lot dirtier even among the wealthier neighborhoods than it used to be. I think because these kids are convinced they're somehow saving the planet by not bathing. Okay, then, this is a CNN business, also August 2022. A third of Brits face poverty with energy bills set to hit $5,000. Now, I don't know if that has come to pass in any form or fashion, but, you know, I find this to be an honest headline that this will be expensive. But here you have Euro Weekly saying Germany considering switching off traffic lights due to an energy crisis. Okay, that seems a bit extreme. What are they going to do? Place human beings in intersections to direct traffic? I don't know. I don't know what this means. But these are the sacrifices that we're hearing about in European countries, where, you know, the third world is expected to just completely go without energy at times for up to a billion people. So they're being asked to sacrifice the most. But the excuse for all of this, or the way this is explained by the elites who burn all this carbon to go to these conferences, is that, wait, hold on, we're talking about the redistribution of wealth from the U.S. and Europe and Australia and others to these underdeveloped countries, whether they're in, you know, south of the equator. And that makes it okay. Mr. Gorham, why would that not make it okay?
Yeah, well, you've covered a lot of topics there. So, yeah, Europe has just gone through what I call a transnational energy shock over the last 2 years. Their electricity rates are up triple. Their natural gas prices are up 2.5 times. The only reason the lights stayed on last winter is because natural gas was being shipped in large quantities from the United States and from Qatar into Europe because Russia had cut off gas. But there are all kinds of problems. They've even a Swiss minister, and I talk about all this in Green Breakdown, what was happening over there. A Swiss minister said you should shower with a friend, you know, to save energy. So but we just had
is that what he was doing?
We just had an article 2 weeks ago from the International Energy Agency praising Europe on being much more energy efficient because they're using 15% natural gas. But all these things are going on, you talk about, and people are going to bed earlier to stay warm. If you talk to people in England, they don't want to turn on their ovens. They don't want to turn on their stoves. That International Energy article said, yeah, people are putting newspaper on the inside of their windows to insulate. Isn't that great? Well, that is not efficiency. That is loss of a standard of living when this stuff is going on. And so this is just one of the things coming in a green breakdown, and Europe has kind of made their bed here by first getting rid of more than 100 nuclear plants, getting rid of much of their coal, and importing all their natural gas. They didn't do any hydraulic fracturing, and so they're in a world of trouble over there right now. And again, it's impacting industry, it's impacting people. Just really a sad story. And I'm trying to remember the rest of your question. So I was going on Europe there.
Well, I mean, it's just a matter of people are sacrificing. It's true that actually the poorest countries are sacrificing the most
by this
burden, this wall being erected by the elites to keep fossil fuels and nuclear out of their countries. And the justification is, don't worry about it.
We'll give them large amounts of money.
Yeah.
So one of the things that our climate envoy John Kerry said just a few days ago is that we need to get rid of all the coal plants across the world. So here's the story, though. Coal is the biggest producer of electricity globally. 35% of the world's electricity comes from coal. There are about 4,000 coal-fired power plants, and the world is building another 1,000, either in planning or building right now. Yet we have a shortage in electricity. We have 700 million people that don't have access to electrical power, and there are literally a couple hundred hospitals around the world that don't have electricity. Imagine a hospital without electricity, no air conditioning, no electricity for the operating rooms. And then there's another 2 billion people that have blackouts or brownouts every other day. And so we have 2.7 billion people that don't have enough electricity. If you have an air conditioner in the United States, your air conditioner uses more electricity than a third of the world's people use. during a year. So there's a tremendous need for electricity, a tremendous need for coal to provide it. But John Kerry, well, you know, he doesn't really care if these people have electricity. We just got to get rid of the coal to try and keep the planet from warming. And you're right about the money. There's huge amounts of money. One of the reasons they have all the developing nations participating in this climate conference is there are promises of vast wealth transfers. A couple of years ago, India asked for $1 trillion a year from the wealthy nations to help it reach net zero by 2070. I mean, we're not talking small amounts here. And so they get high attendance from all of these developing nations, even though they know they have to use coal, oil, and natural gas if they're going to raise the incomes and the standard of living of their people.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. Let's talk about, I got only about a minute left here. You sent over some U.S.-based information. Basically, what electricity costs for Americans right now so far, 2022. And I was shocked to see that, yes, well, you would expect California and New York hose their people on electricity prices, and, you know, Florida and Texas are quite low. The first place winner for the lowest electricity price is Washington State.
Yeah.
So y'all don't,
because,
you know, I get accused of like slamming on blue states, but exactly. It's because of hydroelectric. They have it, we don't.
Hydropower, but they want to get rid of the dams now. They want to, you know, tear down the dams up there.
Right. Right.
Which isn't so good. But yeah, California is now twice as high as any other Western state. They, in the last 3 years, they passed up New England. They're the second highest electricity price in the country behind Hawaii, and that's green California. But right, wherever you have hydro, and also the Midwest is fairly low, and they use a lot of coal-fired power in the Midwest, and
right,
it keeps their prices low. Missouri, for example, 12 cents a kilowatt hour. The national average is 15, and California's way up at 26 cents a kilowatt hour.
So I'm talking with Steve Gorham, and he is the author of Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. You can buy it on Amazon.com. He is also the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. Steve, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jackie. Until the next time.
Yes, sir. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. Find me online at JackieDaly.com, on the X at Jackie Daly Host, and on Truth Social, if you prefer, Jackie Daly. And Instagram, you can subscribe for free just about anywhere that quality podcasts are found. But of course, I should direct you to theblaze.com for your preferred podcasting outlet. So earlier this week, I was able to attend an event with Alex Epstein. You know him as the author of The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, has a new book out called Fossil Future. I went to the book launch. He's been on the show. Great talk. He kind of specializes these days in developing energy talking points for public officials, policy for public officials, from presidential candidates all the way down to governors and state legislators. And then these are talking points made the size of a tweet, so you can pull them out quickly, use them all by themselves, use them with your kids and your grandkids who are terrified into not having children because they're so afraid of climate change. It's great stuff. You should check that out. Alex is doing great work and probably has more influence on this particular issue with lawmakers than any single individual I know, which is exciting, even more than Al Gore. I mean it. So my friend Mark Morano, who's been on the show many times, is on the ground at COP28, the climate conference in Dubai, and flagged for everyone, since mainstream media won't do it, that the president of the UN Climate Summit slipped and said the quiet part out loud, specifically that there is no science, quote, no science behind the need to phase out fossil fuels. And even UN scientists have admitted the temperature goals are pulled out of thin air. So imagine this. This guy's name is Sultan Al-Jaber in the UAE. And yes, it should strike you as a little ironic, maybe, that the UAE, which makes its money off of oil and gas, is the host of the world's climate conference. But there's actually a really good reason why that makes sense. I'm happy to explain it. This is a moneymaker for them. It's a PR stunt for them. Whatever harms oil and gas producers, say in the United States or the UK or Norway or Australia, with all of this press, helps them because they are our competitor. Do you think they're going to cut their own production? No way. They roll out some solar panels and put the same guy in charge of that who runs the national oil and gas company on which over 90% of the revenues depend. Are they going to kill themselves economically to meet these goals? No way. No way. Apparently worldwide, the most widely held policy position is that climate change is a danger to mankind. So said Alex Epstein at the event. Specifically that fossil fuels actually need to be eliminated. I mean, it's not so much that climate change is real and concerning, it's that fossil fuels should be eliminated. This is like worldwide how successful they've been, because after all, these are government-sponsored campaigns to get people to buy in to this redistribution of wealth, literally trillions, with a T, dollars, moving from the American taxpayer, because you pay for this in your tax bill, as well as your electric bill, to these corporations that roll out these solar panels, to the governments like the UAEs that roll out solar panels. It's a transfer of wealth from wealthy countries to less wealthy countries, most of it on the backs of American taxpayers. That's really the long and short of it. So what I'm saying is all green policy or climate change policy actually benefits OPEC and Russia, because those are dictatorships that rely almost exclusively on oil and gas. They're never going to cut it, but they love to watch countries like ours, the number one producer of oil, self-destruct by cutting our own production of coal, oil, and natural gas, and they can pick up that market share and make all that money. By the way, the less of it that's on the market, the higher the price. They can get a whole lot more money for a whole lot less production. It is a win-win-win. And you might say, but Jackie, haven't you seen their pretty words and pretty speeches at the UN and the photo ops they do with Al Gore? Yes, I've seen all of that. But when it comes to politicians and governments, you can't judge them on words, ever. You can only judge them on actions and results. I drive this home. I should start saying this every single show. With politicians, you don't judge them by words. You judge them by actions. Let there never be an exception to the rule. And this is why some people can support candidates like Donald Trump, despite the fact they don't like his words. They're judging him on the actions, on the results, on the policies. And it doesn't mean that the words don't matter. They certainly do matter. I mean, words can set off wars. So I'm not suggesting to you that words are unimportant. But we have to at all times elevate and multiply by a factor of five the actions as what we believe, in contrast to the propaganda. That's all I'm saying. Mr. Jabbar, the Al Jabbar, the leader of the UAE's oil company hosting this climate conference, made his comments about there being no science, which says that we need to phase out fossil fuels. He said this during a panel at the She Changes Climate panel event. You heard that correctly. She Changes Climate panel event. I don't know if this is a feminist thing or what. But Al Jaber, again, of the UAE, was asked by Mary Robinson, who's the former president of Ireland and the current chair of the Elders Group, an independent group of global leaders, if he would lead on the phasing out of fossil fuels. So this is like kind of a common tactic of Marxist, right? They'll put someone on the spot in public. Here you are in front of the microphones with about 500 cameras in your face. And I'm asking you, chairman of the UAE's oil company, are you going to lead on phasing out fossil fuels? In other words, you know, are you going to lead in destroying your country's economy and revenues? Are you going to lead by destroying your country's way of life? That's what they do. Apparently, this was the philosophy behind putting countries like Libya and Iran and Sudan onto the UN Human Rights Council, as if somehow they would all be shamed into behaving better if only they were given the title of Human Rights Czar. You're now the Czar of Human Rights. Remember what I told you about envoys and czars? That translates to unelected and unconfirmable. That's what it means, okay? You see envoy, you see czar, you see like five-time loser. Couldn't get elected, had to be plugged in somewhere, and he needs a career resurrected, can then go on and, you know, to speaking engagements where they get paid $500,000 an engagement as a backhanded payoff for all the destruction they advocated for to the benefit of countries like the UAE who are hosting this conference. Maybe I'm a little too cynical. So I love that after the former Ireland president, Mrs. Robinson, put him on the spot. Here's his response. He said he had expected to come to the She Changes Climate meeting to have a, quote, sober and mature conversation, and was not signing up to any discussion that is alarmist. Hey, I give him points for candor, right? So he went on to give some lip service to his North Star on climate change, but that our discussion should be, was this quote, we need to be real, serious, and pragmatic about it. Okay. He said to her, to Mrs. Robinson, quote, please help me. Show me a roadmap for a phase out of fossil fuels that will allow for sustainable socioeconomic development, unless you want to take the world back into caves, unquote. Bam. Hey, that's an honest man. He's telling the truth. I can see the heads exploding at COP28. You got 70,000 people lined up over there, hoping to saddle up at the trough of redistributed wealth. And here he is saying, if you follow through with these plans, we're all going to go back into living in caves. That's about what would be required. This was a moment of honesty. So then I see a story linked here, and it said COP28 Dubai greenwashing. And this is a CNN story. A CNN story. I'm like, CNN is using the term greenwashing? What's happened? Have they started listening to the Jackie Daly show? What's going on? So I went to that story, and it's titled Fake Twitter Profiles, Wikipedia Editing and PR Battles, Inside the Push to Greenwash the COP28 Climate Summit, by a journalist, Ivana Kotesova. Ivana Kotesova. She sounds like someone who would understand petrostates. All right, I have to go to break. I'll be right back. This is Jackie Daly Show. Okay, so I'm back. This is Jackie from the Jackie Daly Show. Picking up where I left off, I didn't realize I was up against a break. This is a CNN story about COP28, the climate conference, the UN conference. It's titled Fake Twitter Profiles, Wikipedia Editing and PR Battles, Inside the Push to Greenwash the COP28 Climate Summit. Again, authored by a journalist named Ivana Kotesova. Ivana Kotesova. And I'm just telling you, I saw her name and I thought, here's a woman who should understand petrostates. Sounds like she might have come from one. I don't know. So here is their take on what I just told you last segment about the fact that the president of the climate summit said, hey, there's no science behind phasing out fossil fuels. Like there's some kind of emergency. Okay. They say the optics of a major oil-producing country, they mean the UAE, organizing the world's most important climate conference and appointing an oil company CEO to lead it are not lost on anyone, including, it seems, the hosts, the United Arab Emirates. The country has embarked on a major PR campaign to boost its green credentials. Yes. Yes, as I said. And this is prompting heavy criticism from climate groups, I love this. At the same time, researchers are raising red flags over allegations of more covert influence campaigns. Man, they sound like me. As members of the COP28 team were found by the Center on Climate Reporting and The Guardian to have been editing Wikipedia pages about the conference's chief, and an army of fake social media accounts has appeared promoting the country's climate record. Remember the story I did like 2 months ago on the Twitter blondes? The phony Twitter blondes with, you know, American-sounding names, hot ladies, hot bots that were cheerleading Middle Eastern petro-dictatorships for how green they were? Remember that? Sounds awfully similar to that. And what, they're criticizing this guy for greenwashing his background? Like every other ESG applicant who wants money from Wall Street? I mean, I think greenwash.com is a great name for a company. It helps you become more sustainable and more ESG to the public, your public-facing image. For once, CNN and I agree on something. Okay, but the UAE, again, a petro-dictatorship, insists that it is, quote, ideally suited to host this climate conference. But some climate researchers are concerned these campaigns point to a lack of genuine ambition for the crucial summit, which comes as the world experiences, and it goes on and on about how things are so, you know, extreme and record-breaking and horrible. You know, it really, it sounds like CNN's been listening to my show. I've been talking about this for 5 years. It's a PR stunt, okay? It's talk. Supposedly, according to a lady named Jenny King, the head of climate research and policy at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, quote, it raises a lot of alarms about how much these kinds of influence operations are going to ramp up and become more sophisticated and complex as we get nearer to the time. Ms. King, I couldn't agree more. There is plenty of influence operations going on all around, especially surrounding climate change. No question. See, when I say these things, I'm a conspiracy theorist. CNN writes them and quotes these people from these big international organizations, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, of course. Believe me. This is an old game. This is not new news. It's been going on a while. So, you know, these climate summits take place every year, but they have a different location among five regional groups. Last year it was Egypt. And this year they have double the attendance of Egypt. And as I told you last show, you know something? I wonder if that's because they don't realize that the game is about up. They're about to run out of other people's money. So everyone's running to cash in now. I feel like it might be the signs of a death throw, because soon it will become clear that these goals are not attainable. They're physically and mathematically not attainable. Literally, you would have to multiply the amount of mining around the world times 10 to get all the lithium and cobalt and nickel and everything you would need to make all these batteries to store solar and wind power or for electric vehicles or whatever. The mining infrastructure doesn't even exist for the promises that are being made. That's where we are. Okay, and what else? In the past, they had these conferences in Poland, in Glasgow, Scotland, major oil and gas producer. What else? In January, Sultan Al-Jaber, the man I've been quoting, to the horror of many climate groups, supposedly, was named the summit president. They must have known he was a plain talking guy. This makes people nervous. CEO of the state-owned Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, the ADNOC. The COP28 team told CNN, Al-Jaber, quote, has a single-minded focus on delivering a transformational COP that unites the world around tangible climate action, unquote, destroying his country's economy. No, that's me. That was not a quote. Anyway, they said it was a conflict of interest is the point. And they were so concerned that this man could be honest, that in May, more than 100 members of the U.S. Congress and the European Parliament called for him to step down, claiming his appointment risked undermining the negotiations. Is he really worse than all the other people involved? But hey, he had one ally. Guess who? U.S. climate envoy John Kerry, who told the Associated Press that he was a terrific choice. Again, envoy means unelected and unconfirmed. The EU climate chief also liked him. Timmermans said he, quote, started with sustainability policies long before anyone else in the oil and gas sector. Okay. So, okay. That's who this guy is. Remember his name, Sultan Al-Jaber of the UAE, an honest man. You know what? I like honesty. I'll take it. We got all kinds of problems. I can accept a lot of faults, but this guy gets a lot of points from me. Okay. Let me move on. I've only got 2 minutes in this segment. Just a quick reminder. I have here from ARSTechnica.com. Electric vehicles have 79% more reliability problems than gas cars, says Consumer Reports. Widely accepted wisdom has it that electric vehicles are easier to maintain than those with internal combustion powertrains. That would seem intuitive because EVs have many fewer moving parts. So, you know, you don't have to maintain it as much. You're not dealing with hydrocarbons, detonating. It's would seem to be intuitive. But in fact, that's not what Consumer Reports has found. They are buying cars for its own test fleet. But for annual reliability survey, they cast a wider net. They gathered data from 330,000 owners of vehicles from model year 2000 onwards, and then uses that data. So this is real data. This is not speculation. This is not what might sound like it makes sense. This is real information gathered from 330,000 people. The results are, quote, inconvenient for the EV evangelist. Results, EVs had 79% more reliability problems than a gasoline or diesel-powered vehicle on average. The plug-in hybrids actually were the worst. 146% more issues. Okay, the simpler, not plug-in hybrids had 26% fewer reliability problems, to be entirely fair. Okay. It goes into a whole lot of, like, super technical stuff. I'm not going to bore you with all of that. But you got the high points. Again, quick review. What we said was EVs have 79% more reliability problems. If it's a plug-in EV, we're talking about 146% more issues on average than the conventional internal combustion engine. What President Trump was talking about in his interview with Hannity, if you saw that, he went on at length about energy and black gold and had a lot to say about this issue in particular. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show.